Up in the morning and in the field, breaking my back just to pay my bills. Love what I do till the day I'm dead. I'll be working on my old homestead.
Turn it on.
Welcome back, folks. This is Lloyd Creech II.
Paul McDaniel.
And you're listening to Radio Hour with EKH on 104.9 FM WSKV at Stanton, Kentucky. Hope everybody's doing great this weekend.
Well, we're doing fine. I was going to tell everybody I was Elmer Fudd, but Lloyd said we're not allowed to lie. So,
yeah, we try not to stretch the truth too much here.
Yeah, not too much anyway.
Yeah, too much. Let's see. Crappy weather here lately.
Oh, man. What's getting me is we have a beautiful day. Like, it's been beautiful today, a little windy, but the sun's shining, all my batteries are charged up, everything's wonderful. Now, tomorrow, you know, it's probably going to turn crap.
What is the forecast for Saturday?
I don't know, and I wouldn't believe them if they told me. Well, it was supposed to be cloudy and snowy and rainy this morning when I got up and the sun was shining just as bright as it could shine.
Now, when I left the house this morning and stuff, everything was white. Rooftop's white, the grass is white, every vehicle is white.
Well, see, we didn't have that.
And stuff. We got at least a quarter inch, if not a half inch, in spots. Now, the Interstate 64 between Mount Sterling and Owensville was shut down for accidents.
Yeah, they said there was a bunch of them.
And then they had accidents on 75.
Well, that's the one I heard. I guess there was like 14, 15 accidents
and stuff. So it was. It snowed, but when I got to Camargo, rooftops had a little dusting on them, but everything else was clear. And then I got a little bit further south. Nothing. I mean,
well, when you texted me earlier today and asked me about coming across to Furnace Mountain, I didn't know what you were talking about when you said snow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we didn't have any snow on Cobb Hill. Nothing up there this morning. There was a little dusting yesterday. It was gone.
Yeah.
But about 2 miles out Watson Ridge towards Furnace, didn't there was snow all over the place?
Yeah. One of the guys that listened to us that I'm friends with on Facebook and stuff, he posted a picture, says this is why Powell County didn't have school and stuff, because the top of Furnace Mountain, it looked like white out there for a little bit. So I don't know.
Well, there's a story on that too, and Angie and I kind of discussed it on the little late on the radio here in the mornings.
Yeah.
You know, she grew up in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
They did not miss school because of snow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, I grew up in the Laurel Mountains in Pennsylvania, so I sent her a little text back. I said, all our buses had tire chains on them.
Yeah, yeah. I remember going to school with tire chains on.
You know, it took a blizzard to knock us out of school. But I remember us kids, we'd stand on top of one of them big hills and watch that school bus just pawing its way up through the... And they didn't plow the roads because it didn't make any sense to plow it. It was just going to snow it back. We'd be, oh, come on, I hope that bus don't make it. And the bus would pull up. That old guy driving it, y'all get in the bus, sit down, shut up.
Yeah.
But we'd get in, sit down, but we didn't shut up, of course, you know. But
we actually had one year in school, it was when I was in elementary school, we had one bus driver. His name was Delbert Williams.
Well,
and he's from Jeffersonville over there. And, you know, when you get on, usually the first thing you hear on a school bus is the motor, right? And then the second you hear all the screaming kids and all that. Well, his, you heard the motor and that was it. Because if you talked, laughed, did anything, that was it. You was in trouble big time and stuff. You was not allowed to talk on Delbert Williams' bus.
Well,
and stuff. If you did stuff, you got in big trouble and stuff and all that. So, but that's funny.
Well, that didn't happen when I was growing up. There was that bus driver. He'd heard worse. He probably had 14 kids at home. He knew what it was all about.
But. So we've had crappy weather. It's either rain, been cold, been super windy, something in the last 2 weeks.
It just hasn't been all the way nice
and stuff. Now we had that one or two 60 degree day or bouncing on 60, but the next day was 35 and stuff. So my sinuses are going haywire.
Yeah.
And stuff, because I get used to breathing warm air, and then it gets cold, and I have to start breathing cold air, and then so my sinuses don't know what to do.
Well, I don't mind winter. I mean, we got to have it. But
yeah.
I like a winter. It doesn't have to snow, but I like a winter where it pretty much stays the same temperature every day and every night all the way through. This weird fluctuation business, your body doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, and so, but it's wet.
Well, that's a big problem.
It's really wet and stuff. I've had several people tell me here in the last couple of days, they said, man, I bet you'd be glad when it warms up and dries out a little bit so you can go back to work. Well, I've been working every day.
Well, I do too.
My farmhand, Jordan, and stuff, he's been needing some money and stuff, and so he's like, man, can you please help a feller out and give him some work to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we've been working on this fence line that I was talking about last time on here. It's 1,440 linear feet, and we literally Friday afternoon, about 2 o'clock, we pulled out the last panel of fencing out of the trees and stuff. We've been having to go in and cut it out of the trees and everything, and then pull it out of the ground. This morning and stuff, we was up there, we got there, we had one section that had 4 lines of fencing.
Oh, no.
Where it had been fixed and fixed and fixed over the years.
All twisted together and
all twisted
nailed
together
every kind.
And you got all these trees growing through it and everything. And we have cut out, 30 trees already.
Well, see, I thought this was going to turn into your brick chimney story.
No, and so we were done. The metal wire is out of the fence now.
Great.
And so now we got, with the wind that's been coming through here, we're not able to cut trees down right now.
No, I wouldn't even try.
And so if it's windy, I do not cut a tree.
No,
stuff,
I don't.
You don't know
either.
Which way a thing's going to go. And in fact, I got a little story on that. So the other day, it was not real windy. It was one day last week. And there's this tree. It was about 30 foot tall. It had about a 24-inch base on it. And I sit there and I wedged it and everything, cut through it, and the thing just sit there and stayed in one spot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what in the world?
So you don't know which way to run.
Yeah, you don't know which way to run or nothing like that. So I go and get my little farm truck and chains. I got tree straps that go around the tree and then hook to a chain and stuff. And so I hooked the truck to it. Well, the truck wasn't heavy enough to pull the tree. So here I am trying to tighten the chain up as much as I can. And then I go back there and jump on the chain to give just that, it just needs enough to go ahead and fall. And stuff. It fell opposite of where the wedge was.
Yeah.
And stuff. And I'm like, what in the world? And stuff. I've been falling trees for forever.
Well, you never know with a tree.
And you really don't. Stuff is. I mean, I've had trees spin on me. I've had trees fall over stuff that you're just like, what in the world? But this tree here, I mean, it was 30 some foot tall. It was 24 inch base, wedged out. Everything's going right and stuff. And then I cut through it. It just stood there. I'm like, huh. And so I spent the next 10 minutes, trying to get it to fall over.
Yeah. I did that with Big Poplar one time when I was building Susan's log house. I cut that thing, and I cut it all the way through, and it just stood there. And had Odell Townsend was up there with me at the time. And I said, what do I do? He said, just sit still. He said, just wait. And he said, don't try to get away from it because you don't know which way it's going to fall.
Yeah, I know.
So that tree started shaking.
Uh-huh.
And finally, it actually jumped up in the air, and it started going that way, and Odell grabbed me by the seat of the pants because it was on a steep hill, and we went the other way. And he said, that's called stump jumping. He was a professional logger. And he said he's seen that happen quite often.
We grabbed the tractor and everything. We wound up grabbing the tractor and the chain and everything and trying to pull this thing over, and it finally fell. And stuff, but the chain was a little bit too short and stuff. It didn't hit the tractor, but it came real close. Come closer than I would like for it to come, but it did finally fall down.
Yeah, they tell you never try to push one over like that either, because what will happen is it'll push at the bottom and come back on you.
Well, that or the top will fall out and then come back down on you that way and then get you really good.
Yeah, it's dangerous, whatever.
And so we got the fencing done. 90% of the fun of fencing right now is trying to get to the fence because it is so muddy outside and trying to get, you know, we got to drive through the hay storage lot, which is rutted up from, you know, driving back and forth with the tractor, trying to get through the feed lot right now, which is between the hay storage lot and the hay pasture. And so we've been, you know, it's been really fun just trying to get to the fence and stuff. But like I said, we got the wire down. We need the wind to calm down a little bit and everything to be able to finish cutting trees. And then hopefully by the end of next week, we should be ready to start pulling the new fence up.
Well, now the old post, are you pulling them out or are you just pushing them over?
Post?
There are no old posts in there?
It's just I probably got enough hands and toes to count how many posts are in that fence.
Well.
And stuff. And they are old cedar posts and stuff. They ain't very big at all. But this fence is literally so old that the posts have either rotted out completely or it was nailed to a tree.
Yeah.
And a lot of the trees have died and stuff over the years. And so we're going in and like I said, we're having to cut around the trees to get the wire out and everything. So it's been fun.
And the wire's petrified, so it's just standing there by itself.
Yeah, yeah. And so there's, you know, we ran into, there's a limestone rock laying on the ground. We're like, oh, wow, that means the rock is right there. I mean, there's no topsoil to this. And so come to find out the fence was underneath the limestone, so somebody thrown the rock or something other,
well,
you know, years and years ago. And stuff, and it had been covered up with debris and everything.
Well, that's weird.
And stuff, so that's just crazy. And stuff, and so that's the fun part of farming right now is the mud.
Well, like I said, we don't have mud like that down on the creek, but it's been wet enough now that it's you got to be careful trying to turn around the grass or anything because you're just slipping and sliding. But now they're up on the cliff above me, they're tearing an old house down. Well, it was a bricked up trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's got a big track hoe in there. And they were starting to have trouble with the track hoe. That is so soft on top up there, and it's just sand. Yes. That the track hoe was starting to sink in it.
Uh-huh. But, you know, we was talking to Ethan about the springs and stuff.
Yeah.
So I got 30 springs on my farm.
Well.
And they're either water veins, wet water veins, or actual springs. And so that doesn't help the fact any that, you know, you got big heavy equipment driving back and forth trying to get the fence and everything. And so I've been having to eat. A lot of people think I'm crazy to take a drag out in this type of ground conditions. But we're going back and dragging every day and stuff. So so we're not rutting up the place
right,
so bad.
Yeah.
So it's cutting down on time that we'll have to spend later on.
Well, if you let it really get tore up, then you're going to have a problem.
Yeah, so we've been taking the drags out with us every morning and stuff. We've been putting the drags back on the tractor. And so where we drive at and stuff, it goes ahead and drags the ground so we don't rut it up.
Well, now my hill road, the one I've been working on, you know, I had that whole thing rocked from one end to the other. And for the last year and a half, 2 years,
uh-huh.
That rock's been great. But after we had that freeze,
yeah,
that rock went down and the mud came up.
Oh, no.
So he's going to, as soon as the weather gets good, I'm going to have it rocked all the way from the top down past my house all the way down to the little creek. I'm just going to go for it. You know, I'm going to tell him to put it on heavy.
I know my mom, she had to come pick me up the other day so she could take me to another barn down the road and stuff. She goes, good Lord, you're going to have to get some rock in here. And I'm like, so I can get some rock? And she goes, yeah, because my truck or my vehicle's getting muddy. All right, I'll get some rock then, because I don't care about mud, you know. Every vehicle, I got some mud.
Nah, I got mud on everything, too.
And stuff. But she does not like having mud on her vehicle. Dad definitely does not like having mud on his truck. But so I got the okay to go ahead and get a load of rock in there, so I'm getting some rock.
Well, see, they shut the quarry down on Tipton Ridge.
Oh, did they?
So for him to bring me rock now, he's got to come from Bowen.
Oh, wow. That's
so it's going to be an extra charge here, but I got telling him, I said one thing about it, when he'll come over from Bowen down to Stanton 213 and then come up Furnace Mountain and come, because he'll be coming over the hill.
Yeah.
But when he comes out down to the end of the hollow, you see, if he turns left and goes up Patsy, you know, he'll be on South Fork. When he comes back down, Bowen's right there.
Yeah.
So he'll be able to deadhead back.
That's right. I forgot about that.
So he'll be able to deadhead back, and it's only 10, 11 miles.
Yeah.
So it can save him a little on the travel time. But yeah. He won't want to come that way with a load.
No. Uh-uh.
Well, because he would have to go back up Sally Ann and then come back down over the hill there. But so we try to save him a little travel time.
Yeah. But so I forgot the quarry was like right there. So
yeah, I mean, it was only a few miles from the quarry. It's all up and down, but it's still not far.
Yeah, it's all steep hills, though.
Well, you know, them guys will roll right on down them. Uh-huh. We're coming up from the quarry, though, coming up Tipton Ridge. They come back through Tipton Ridge and Watson Ridge.
Uh-huh.
So you only have that one little piece of hill from the quarry up to the top of Tipton Ridge.
Okay, yeah. All right, see. So we had to go to a birthday party last weekend. And, you know, every time you go to a party of some kind, you're going to come home sick or somebody's going to come home sick.
I don't like being around that kind of people.
And so, Bubby, he got sick, a little sick, there Sunday. And he was sick Monday, Tuesday, and started feeling better, a lot better Wednesday. Well, then Teresa gets sick on Tuesday and gets sick Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. She's starting to feel better on Friday and stuff. And then me, I get a little sniffles on like Wednesday and Thursday, but I only sniffle when I'm at home and stuff. I don't sniffle when I'm outside or working or anything stuff. So I think I'm allergic to something inside the house.
Well, it could be, yeah.
And stuff. Teresa's like, well, you need to go ahead and start taking medicine. I knew I ain't happy.
Well, you guys don't drink Switchel, do you?
No, I don't.
Well, you need to start.
And stuff.
We get sick.
We made a hot toddy tea the other day.
Well.
And it really helped her and stuff. I tasted it and stuff. It wasn't bad. I think she had too much honey in it, but, you know, that's just me.
Probably
I
didn't have enough moonshine in it, though.
I don't know about that and stuff. That's all you there. But we made some hot toddy tea, and it worked for her and stuff. But I use V8 and stuff, which I got green tea and black tea in my V8 and everything. And so I think that's what keeps me going and stuff, other than working out in it.
Well, green tea is good for you.
Uh-huh, yeah, it definitely good for you. See here, I was going to tell you about my bird story.
Oh, yeah, you had a bird sit on you.
And stuff. So the other, what was it, Wednesday night or Thursday night? Friday night, Wednesday night. Thursday night, stuff. We get done with dinner. I go out, smoke my cigarette like I normally do after every meal, stuff. It's 30 degrees outside. Wind's blowing, of course. It can't be cold and you know, no wind blowing. It's going to be cold and 45 mile an hour wind blowing.
That's where it's been.
And so I go outside, and I see this little barn finch flying around. I'm like, what in the world is that? I mean, it's you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. We getting done with supper. And so it's flying around. I thought it was a bat at first, and it just flies around and stuff. I'm like, huh, that's kind of crazy that you see this finch being out this late at night, and especially this cold weather. And then it come over and landed on my shoulder.
Well,
and I kind of, you know, I kind of turn my head and everything to look, turn around, look at it, and it just sat there for, you know, 30 seconds.
Did you talk? Did you talk to it?
Yeah, I was like, hey, buddy, how you doing stuff? Oh, yeah. And you know.
Yeah, fine. How are you?
Yeah. Did sing stuff and then flew back off again. I was like, that will probably never, ever happen to me ever again. Oh. And stuff. So I go in and I'm telling Teresa about it. She said, you're lying. I said, I ain't lying. I said, it just happened and stuff.
Oh, I believe you.
She said, well, it probably thought you was a tree or something. Other. It probably did, but.
Well, I don't know.
And stuff. But that happened.
Well, you know, I got my bird feeder hangs out there on a tree limb right off the porch, and I got birds that aren't a bit afraid of me.
Really?
Yeah, I'll come out there, and a year ago I had a cardinal, boy uh-huh. cardinal out there, and I called him Mr. Chirpy. And, well, he would chirp, 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 and if there wasn't any food on that plate out there for him, he would come up to the porch, and he'd just raise Cain. And he'd chirp, 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 and flap his wings around until I went out there, and he'd follow me all around, fly all around me until I put some chirp on that plate for him. And that's what he called a chirp, you know. Uh-huh. And but there was one day I went down to the barn. Now, this is true,
Lloyd. Well, you need to straighten out your thyroid medicine or something.
Well, one day I went down to the barn, and he followed me all the way to the barn,
uh-huh.
just flying all around me, carrying on. And he sat on a limb down there at the barn and chirped and carried on. And I said, okay. So I knew what was wrong. There wasn't any feed on that plate. And so I went all the way back to the house and got some sunflower seeds and took it out there. And he chirped and carried on until I put it on there. And he just landed right there. My hand was right there with him. And but that's, he was telling me there was no feed on that plate. he was just cutting up and carrying. But he'd let me get so close to him.
Mr. Chirpy needed some chirp.
Yeah, that's what he called that stuff. He called it chirp. He said, "Where's my chirp at?" You know? But, you know, you make pets. You look at it, if you've got a parakeet or a canary or something, they're pets, you know.
And, yeah.
You know, and the wild birds can get tame, too. Uh-huh. They know you're feeding them. They know you're all right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I had a squirrel. He's gone now, but I had a squirrel. I called him Squirrel. And he'd come all the way up to
Man, you got some really good names there.
Well, two spots is two spots.
Yeah.
Lloyd's Lloyd. You know? But, you know, I like my critters, you know, and I do my little evening walk, you know, and I thank God for everything I've got. And I always thank him for my birds and my squirrels and my cats and my dog, and, you know, because it makes life worth living.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We got that new Aussie Doodle there in the house. And so I took him to the vet Wednesday. And so now he's allowed to go outside because he's had all his shots and everything. And so we're going to start training him to go outside. Supposedly he's supposed to, he looks like a big teddy bear. When he gets older, he's supposed to look like a big old teddy bear. They weighed him the other day. He's like 11 or 12 pounds. He's supposed to top out at like 55 pounds.
Oh, so he's just a little teeny baby dog.
Yeah, he's the little bitty thing right now. And so we got him and everything. And him and Bubby, they play together. They wear each other out.
Well, little boys need little dogs.
Oh, yeah. And stuff. So they just wear each other out all the time. Stuff. It's great to see them play together and everything. So that was my bird story. So I like Mr. Chirpy though.
No, he was a good little bird. Oh, and there was, he disappeared, and he just flew off. And I said, "Well, he's gone." And I'd walked over to Susan's. You know, it's down across the creek, that one creek, and over to her house. And I was coming back, and I heard something chirping and carrying on. There was no dying apple tree right there. Well, he was in that apple tree, and he was just raising cane, and I walked over to him, and Lloyd, I got as close to him as I am to you, and he just was flopping around, chirping and carrying on, and I talked to him for a minute and left, but he was telling me, here I am, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think he got him a girlfriend over there. He didn't have any girl cardinals over at my place, so
yeah.
So he went over there, you know. So anyway, I've been dealing with the PVA office.
Yeah, you tell me this.
Well, Susan and I, years ago, we bought the rest of the holler going on out, and after a while, we gave it to her son. Well, we didn't. He ended up paying it off, you know. But both ends of that had been surveyed, and we knew what we had, and he knew what he had. Well, here a while back, a guy come in there and told him he had 9 acres of that belonged to him. And I'm pretty sure this fellow's got an idea of logging it, because that's what he does. He's a logger.
Yeah.
And I said, well, no, he doesn't. And so again, he was really upset about it. He goes, what can I do, you know? So I went in and talked to Jeff Hicks down at Irvin, down at PVA there. And Jeff had it all pulled up on his computer screen when I walked in. He said, you're just the guy I was wanting for. And we got to talking about it, and he said, I can't find a 9 acres here that belongs, I won't mention the fellow's name, that belongs to that fellow.
Yeah.
And I said, well, because he doesn't own 9 acres in there. I know he don't.
Uh-huh.
And I got to ask, and I said, well, did he say, how long has he had this? He said, well, he bought it in 2007. I said, well, who did he buy it from? And he mentioned the guy's name, and I said, well, that's plumb up in the head of that hollow. That's up 2 miles from here.
Yeah.
The guy didn't even know where he owned.
Oh, okay.
And, but now, if he's thinking about logging that, he's going to bring big equipment in there. He's going to tear up everybody's property between me and there, and nobody wants him to do it. And I don't know what we could do about stopping him. But anyway, Kenny was happy, and then we found out that Kenny owns more property now than they did, because he found out he owned all the way around a bench there that he didn't think he owned.
Yeah.
But Jeff was telling me about the property, the land grants, and everything, the way it happened. And he said the property around these mountains is so hard to survey and so hard to figure out where exact boundaries are. And he said back in the 1700s, most of the property was given by the King of England, you know, to some of their favorite subjects. And they'd bring in their indentured servants. And they were told, you know, after a period of time, they could work up so much land and build a house on, and that was theirs. But most of them couldn't write their names.
Yeah.
So that got took away from them. And a lot of the deeds today filtered down from those days.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the boundaries have never been exact. Uh-huh. And a lot of the surveys, the survey that was on this piece of property that Kenny has, uh-huh. never got registered to courthouse.
Really?
Even though it was surveyed. I was right there when they surveyed it.
Huh.
Never registered it.
Well.
But
it's funny that you say that and stuff, because we own, you know, several acres of land and stuff, and we've been doing title searches here lately, trying to find deeds to property and stuff, and trying to find exactly what points to this point and that.
Yeah,
stuff.
It's difficult.
And it is, and stuff. I've actually went to surveying school and stuff. That's part of my degree field, and which I've lost a lot of that information because I haven't used it, but I'm starting to remember some of it now that I'm starting to do deed searches and all that. And so we's out there cleaning that fence row out the other day and stuff, Jordan, hey Lloyd, what's that pink flagging for? And I'm like, hey, you found survey mark.
Great.
Just he's like, how far apart are these? I said, I think they're 500 feet or so. There's a survey point.
Well, it depends on how the lay of the land. You know, yeah. If they can't shoot a straight line, then they put them as close together as they have to.
Uh huh. And so we found the one at each corner. And now we found the one that is 500 feet from the one corner, but we haven't found any more. I said, I thank you for finding this, because that will help us keep this fence on our side of the property.
Well, now, is there metal stakes down in the ground, too?
Yeah, the metal stakes in the ground. And stuff.
Okay.
And it's right in the middle of the old fence post and stuff. So that fence was right dead on the line stuff. Like it's,
because sometimes you have to take a metal detector to even find those things
and stuff. But here it was. It still had the taping still on it and stuff. I was like, wow.
Well, that stuff don't rot, you know.
Yeah, it's plastic. It's been wrapped, you know, 10, 12 times and stuff. And so he was able to find it. And I was like, cool, you found that and stuff. Because I knew it was here. I just didn't know where. But he actually found the survey marks there.
Well, now there's a difference between surveying, let's say, down in Lexington, some big farm field, you know, than there is up here in these mountains where uh-huh. I'm at. Now, the guys that surveyed this property down here in 1996, they were out of Lexington.
Uh-huh.
And these boys were scared to death. You know, the guy that owned the property at the time, he asked me to kind of stay with them, see what they were doing. And they were afraid something was going to jump out behind a tree, a snake was going to get them.
Yeah.
They were falling down all over the place, and they were heck. They just weren't mountain surveyors.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't even, according to the paperwork Jeff has got down there, they didn't even survey the proper line.
Huh.
Yeah, there's more property too. What they surveyed.
Well, that's true and stuff, because there's a we's looking at a farm several years ago. And it was 131 acres, give or take. And it was a lot more give than take.
Well, most of them are.
And stuff. Because from, you know, this azimuth and stuff, you walk 91 minutes and all this, and then go to this point and go to this point. Well, we got to look and stuff. We had it resurveyed. It was actually 145 acres and stuff. But it was go to this white sycamore tree. Over to this white sycamore
tree. Some of the trees not even there anymore, maybe.
Yeah, some of the trees are not even there anymore. But like our Jeffersonville farm and stuff, you can actually still go by the sycamore trees, because they planted rows of sycamores around the property.
Well, now they did plant, you know, lime trees even in the woods. They'd let certain trees grow just for lime trees. You know, it's against the law to cut them.
Yeah.
You can't do that. But now our deed says 87 acres, more or less.
Uh-huh.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture did an aerial survey one time at a fixed altitude with uh-huh. it, and they said we had 100 plus.
Oh, yeah.
But now, one thing I was talking to Jeff about, he remembers when they been years back now, probably 1978, I guess, they had these two older ladies down at the courthouse in the deed room.
Uh-huh.
And they were consolidating all the old deeds and these old handwritten deeds, and they were putting them in a computer and uh-huh. retyping them up. And then the old handwritten deeds went to the archives in Frankfurt, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I got to read, I don't know if it was a copy of our original deed to our property or the original deed, but it was in old English script.
Uh-huh.
And it called from the cliffs to the mountain springs uh-huh. to the banks of the Kentucky River and all waters within.
Huh.
And it was an estimated about 10,000 acres. That's what Sherman Stewart owned.
Yeah. Know?
But now he was in the Continental Army. He was given land in Kentucky County, Virginia,
uh-huh.
back in 1787.
Well, that's cool.
But he built his house right there in front of where my house is at.
And so a lot of the old surveying was done by chains and links.
Mm-hmm.
And a chain, I forgot how long a chain was and stuff, 20 feet or something like that. Yeah, stuff. But like they were, could you imagine?
Well, they used a rod, too, which was just a big long stick, you know, about 4 to 8 foot or something.
And could you imagine carrying this chain through the old?
Well, Lloyd, it wasn't no big logging chain, you know. It was a...
And stuff, but you still, it's still a chain. Right, I mean, a chain's heavy.
Yeah.
And stuff. So, you know, so many chains and so many links and so many rods. And
well, they let the dummy pack that.
It don't matter who packed it. It was heavy.
Yeah.
And stuff. But, yeah, that was cool and stuff. He's talking about, you know, I was over in Mount Sterling there and stuff. It said, yeah, it goes to Hingston Creek and then comes up here 200 feet and over there goes north and stuff. And that's cool and stuff to really – go in and check your property lines and stuff. There's a lot of tools online now, and I do this for the farm and stuff, is I'll get on Google Earth or USDA.gov and get on their satellite imagery and stuff, and you can actually pinpoint, if you know where your property lines are and stuff, and it's really good to get to know your property lines.
Oh, absolutely.
And stuff. Is get on USDA.gov, get their little measuring sticks out there, and you can go around to each point, and normally they're pretty close to being right. Now, every now and then they will be off and stuff. I have found some of ours to be off.
Well.
And being 2022 and going into 2023, if you own a farm or something other, you should be getting a census for the agriculture department. And I've already filled half of mine out. It's online and stuff. You either get paper form or you can go online.
Well, I still get one every once in a while, but we don't farm anymore, so.
Yeah, and so I've been filling mine out, and I was trying to be a little bit more technical with it than I probably should. But, you know, you got agricultural land. But how much of it can it actually be used for agriculture?
Right.
And stuff, because we got a lot of standing timber. We got a lot of waterways and stuff on our land and stuff. So just because you got 100 acres does not mean workable.
Well, look at my place. Acres. I mean, we've only got about 20 acres of tillable ground.
Yeah, so.
The rest is all timber,
and
hillside.
So, we've been going in and changing some of the deeds and stuff on it and stuff to farm. There's I don't know. I can't remember the total thing. 167 total acres, but actual tillable ground and stuff, I'd have to go back and look at the numbers again and stuff, is a whole lot less.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff, because you got to cut out your creeks and stuff. You got to be so far off your creeks and everything. Then you got these standing trees and stuff. And so
well, you gotta
we had to break ours down to tillable ground, hay ground, and pastures.
Oh, you had to. Itemize it.
Yeah, so that's what we's doing and stuff. And I actually carry that book in my farm truck at all times. So.
Well, now, you gotta look at it this way, too. Back, let's say, 1920s and early 1900s, especially up in the hills where I'm at, people used to farm those hillsides.
Yeah.
Everything was cut down. You know, if they couldn't get a mule up there, they took what they called a grubbing hoe and they just, you know, dug a hole in the hillside and put a seed in it.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of old.
So you know when the you know they first got an agricultural base number, you know, they well I've got 80 acres here I'm tending.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I was talking to Mr. Wolf from over in Menifee County about that one time. You know, back in the day when the furnaces were actually up and running.
Well, they cut all the trees down.
Yeah, yeah, there was no trees to be had around here.
Charcoal was a big business.
And stuff. They was either making charcoal or using it for lumber or whatever and stuff. So a lot of these trees that you see around here today, back in the day, was not here.
No.
And stuff. And these woods around here have been logged out and logged out numerous times over the years and stuff. So, you know, I was talking to my farmhand about this today and stuff. A lot of the areas that you see that's open and stuff used to not be open and stuff. People's come in here, did clear cut and stuff, then they had to use the ash for fertilizer and everything. and stuff. So, you know, when Daniel Boone come across here, this is nothing but forest.
Yeah. Well, the Indians kept a few places burned out just for their campsites and all, but yeah, it wasn't like it is now, I mean.
And stuff. So you got to really sit back and think, you know, all these fence rows and stuff, when you put in a woven wire or barbed wire fence and stuff, if you don't weed eat them out every single, you know, every 3 months or every 6 months
it,
or something.
It don't take long to reclaim.
And stuff. The trees are going to come back, and they're going to take it back over and stuff. And I said, look down there at that fence row down there. I said, you know, I redid that fence row 15 years ago when we first took the farm back over. I did not clear cut it like we normally do and stuff. But so we just went in there. I said, a lot of those trees that's in that fence row are only about 25 to 35 years old. And he says, really? He said, I figured someone'd be 100 years old. And I'm like, they ain't a 100-year-old tree,
big tree
on this farm.
Yeah.
And so he says, really? I said, yeah, there's no old growth trees in fence lines and stuff. Because you got to go, you know, I was trying to tell him today, I was like, it does you no good to go in and put a really nice woven wire property line fence up if you don't cut the tree down that's growing, you know, beside it that's already dead. Because the first, you know, you'll get your fence up there, it'll be nice and tight, beautiful and everything, and you're sitting back admiring your job. Here come a big 45 mile an hour wind gust, and the top of that tree falls out and lands onto your brand new fence.
Right, tears it all down.
And tears it all back down. I says, why do that stuff? I said, you got to cut that tree down and stuff, and make sure, you know, that your fence is, you know, tight and everything, but, you know, you got to cut those trees down.
Well, fencing's not an easy job. I don't care what you do.
No.
But
no.
Now, Lloyd, I've got places on my hillsides up and down through there, and it's been years since I've seen them, but I've got trees that are probably 80 and 100 years old, and right in the ground beside them is that old flat barbed wire fence.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're
That's the real old stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, it wasn't round wire. It was flat, and it had flat barbs on it. And now, that fence, when they put that in there, there wasn't any trees there. So that stuff's been in there a long, long time.
Yeah. And so and that's what I was trying to talk to him about. So I was like, hey, dude, you know, so there's no old growth trees here and stuff. But, you know, we're picking the wire out stuff that if you touch it, it breaks. So,
oh, yeah. Well, that's where a lot of this was. It crumbles.
Yeah, and stuff. But we got her done and stuff, but, you know.
Well, I'm still working on ovens to go on top of wood stoves. Well, I made that one, and it's too big to fit on my wood stove. I kind of put it on.
Didn't you measure your wood stove first?
Well, I had it in mind for my old stove, and I ain't got my old stove anymore. So, but
yeah.
No, I didn't measure anything, Lloyd. I just made it. You know, I was making it with what grates I had laying around and stuff to make. But anyway, I made it, and I got it up on my stove kind of cockeyed, and the best I could get out was 200 degrees, which isn't hot enough to bake anything.
Yeah.
And so, well, my neighbor wanted one, and she's got a little gas stove down there, heating stove. So I took it down, and I told her, I said, you know, if this works for you, you can have it.
Uh-huh.
Well, it fit better on top of her stove, and it would get more heat up through it. Well, she could only get it up to 250 degrees.
Really?
So anyway, I took it back home, and I changed the bottom in it. Mm-hmm. And I stuck it back on my stove. Well, it went up to 250 degrees on my stove.
Yeah.
So hopefully it'll go up to 300 or more on hers.
Yeah.
So she can actually bake something in it. It's a pretty little stove, but if it don't work, it don't work.
Yeah.
But now across the road over here, the old Charles Dickens Curiosity Shop across the street, he told me about an old tin stove that was over there. Well, I stopped and bought that today.
Yeah, did you finally find it?
Yeah, it's old. It's kind of rough, but I think I can patch it up and make it work. But she didn't know it was an oven.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think she thought it was something you dried the cat in after you washed it. I don't know what she thought it was.
Me and Teresa went through there one day last year.
A lot of stuff in there.
And as soon as I got out of the Jeep and stuff, I was like, look at that old oven and stuff. She said, what is that? And I said, it's an oven. I said, well, you take it and you put it on top of a stove, and the heat goes up through the bottom, and then you can bake with it.
Yeah.
And stuff, that's what people used to use when they didn't actually have ovens.
Right, a lot of houses, like especially old apartments and stuff, you know, they had a little heating stove in them, but they didn't have an oven.
Yeah.
But now this one's got a hole where you can take a plate off the stove and you can set it down so you get all the heat.
Yeah.
I used to have one. It was
and you actually have one of those stoves, don't you? Do you have one that's got the plates on it?
Well, my gas cooking stove in the kitchen, which is real old, had plates on. It was made in 1887, I think.
Yeah.
But now I've got a little four-plate wood-burning stove.
Uh-huh.
The one I got over in Beattyville a year or so ago, and it's got plates. You can take a plate off of it, but it's got an oven in it.
Yeah.
And my gas cooking stove, of course, got an oven in it. But, you know, I'm trying to get away from not using propane.
Oh, yeah. You know. Stuff. It's expensive, isn't it?
Well, it's getting real high, but so far I checked my tank the other day, and I'm still at 65%.
Really?
And then he filmed 80.
Yeah.
Normally by now I'm getting down to about 20%, but I haven't been using. Every once in a while I use my gas cooking stove.
Yeah.
Just to get my coffee perking good, but that new wood stove I got, it gets hot.
Yeah.
And I just do all my cooking on it.
Yeah.
But I sort of wanted a little oven I could sit on it. Uh-huh. That way I wouldn't have to fire the wood burning cooking stove up.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm still piddling. You know, you got to do things in the winter or you go nuts. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you also go broke in the winter because you're not working.
Well, you know, I was talking about that. I said it's more expensive to stay home than it is to go to work.
It is.
The only thing I do going to work is buy gas in the truck and something for lunch, you know.
Yeah.
And then but home, you're fixing this or doing that, and then you piddle around and break something that ain't broke. You know, you got to. I had my generator break on me.
Yeah.
I've only had it 2 years, electric start.
Uh-huh.
Well, it quit cranking. So I pulled the starter off of it. When I did, boing, it had little springs in it, you know, around the brush. The whole thing just come apart in a million pieces. So
yeah.
I said, oh, no. Well, I ended up losing one of the springs. And anybody out there has ever dealt with brushes and springs, they're not very big. They're tiny mm-hmm. little things. And I called the company I bought the thing from, and they said, well, we carry air cleaners and spark plugs for it. I said, well, no, wait a minute. I told them what was wrong. And they gave me the number of the company. And I don't know what it is with these companies anymore. You call them, all our available agents are busy helping another person. Well, that went on like that for over a week, and I guarantee you I called them 10, 15 times a day.
Yeah.
And finally, I got a hold of this little girl on the phone. It was out in California, and I told her what generator I had, and I told her what was wrong with it. I said, I need the little springs, because I lost one of the springs,
uh-huh.
and I need the brushes. Uh-huh. That's it. Put them in your shirt pocket, you know.
Yeah.
She come back with, oh, the springs are going to be $60. The brushes are $40.
Dang on.
We're going to charge you $13 to ship it to you. And pretty much, how do you like them cookies? And I said, well, this is the way I see it. You put all that little teeny stuff in a little teeny envelope, put a little teeny stamp on it, and send it to me, and I'll give you $13 for all of it. So I ended up buying a brand new. Well, you helped me find it. You look at the V-Power up in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And you have to go online to buy from them. But I got the whole starter. For $54.
Yeah.
And I think they only charged me like $7 to ship it to me.
Yeah, ain't that something?
But anyway, I ended up fixing the starter that was on there. I went down to Do It Center and went, they had a bunch of compression springs and drawers in there, and I found a spring that fit in it. It cost me 85 cents. You know, they wanted $15 a piece for their springs. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. You know. But all their available agents are busy. I figure they got one guy answers the phone, you know, and he has to, you know, he's usually either cleaning the toilet or mopping the floors, and then the phone rings and go, hello, you know.
Yeah. I was talking about that. I'm driving around the Mount Sterling Bypass the other day, and my truck goes to vibrating fiercely.
Oh, no.
I'm like, man, what is that?
Drive shaft or something going on.
And so... I drove it for another couple of days, and it just got a little worse and a little worse. Is your chair hurting you?
Yeah. This ain't a chair. It's a stump.
And so it just kept on getting a little worse. And I texted my cousin Jeremy and stuff. He's a really good mechanic. And I said, you know, why is it my truck's vibrating so bad for it? He said, there's something on your drive line. I said, that's what I was figuring and stuff.
Could be mud on your tire, too.
No, it could be. Well, I get out of the truck over on the farm. There's a wheel weight laying on the ground. I'm like, okay, why is there a wheel weight laying on the ground for? Go over. Guess what? It had fell off my truck.
Yeah.
And so I took a hammer, put it back on there. And so I drive down the road. Well, that wasn't it. So,
would you put it back on the spot that it come off?
Yeah, yeah. Put it on the exact same spot and everything because I got aluminum wheels, so they oxidized a little bit. And so, I'm driving back down the road again, and all of a sudden it starts vibrating vigorously bad. I mean, really bad. And so I pull over and stuff, get out, check around and stuff. Nothing that I can really see and stuff. Then get back in, get going down the road again. When I hit 58 miles an hour, is when it would get out of, you know, its rhythmic balance and everything. And as long as I stayed under that, it did
it was all right.
It would vibrate, but when I got over that speed, then it would really, really.
Did you have a steering problem with it, or was it just a vibration?
Just a vibration. I could feel it in my gas pedal.
Well, you probably got a bruised tire or something, you know?
And no, come to find out. So I took it, put it in the wheel barn Friday morning and stuff, yanked out the drive shaft. And it was the carrier bearing.
Oh yeah.
On the drive shaft that went bad stuff. So the truck is 22 years old or something other. So it's probably never went bad before now and stuff. So, but it's a rubber sleeved carrier bearing.
Yeah.
That went out, and so I went ahead and jerked that thing out. Okay, I drive a Chevy 2500 HD four door long bed. Four-wheel drive truck. You know how long that drive shaft was and stuff? So I go get the Ford Ranger to pick up the drive shaft to take it to Fraley's to get it worked on and everything.
Well, you
so
have to press them.
Yeah, you got to press them out, and you got to press them back on. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so I'm putting this in the back of the Ford Ranger. The drive shaft was almost as long as the whole Ford Ranger
was.
Well,
Rangers aren't, they don't have any beds on them.
Yeah, they're not very big at all. Anyway, and so it's hanging out one side, it's hanging out the other side and stuff. It's actually got two or three universals in it and everything. But I was able to make it to the shop and everything, and so it was the carrier bearing had went bad, and the back universal had locked up. And stuff, and so it was just a matter of time before something catastrophic.
Well, I was gonna rip out of there and just rip you out.
Yeah, and so I went ahead and just shut her down on Friday. Went in there, ripped out 6 bolts holding that whole thing together, and stuff. 4 7/16 bolts and 2 15-millimeter bolts is the only thing holding that whole drive shaft in there to begin with. So it wasn't hard to take out. It was just long, and stuff. And so we was able to get that taken care of. Cost me like $100 to get it rebuilt and everything. So I am not going to complain over $100 and stuff, because, you know, if I'd been pulling a trailer up a steep hill or something other and that thing go out and stuff, it could have been a lot worse.
Well, they can tear up. They can do a lot of damage when they bust out of
there,
too.
Yes, sir.
I've seen the drive shaft twist out and just look like a pretzel.
Uh-huh. And I've seen drive shafts do a lot of damage to a vehicle, mm-hmm. and stuff when they come out of there and stuff. So luckily, you know, the truck and stuff, I don't drive a lot anyway. I usually stay in Montgomery County with it. It gets 7 miles to the gallon. You don't want to take it too far.
No, not at all.
And stuff. So you really don't want to take it. You will pass everything but the gas station with this.
Well,
thing.
You carry an extra jug of gas with you, don't you?
Well, and I don't care about the jug of gas and stuff. I got a 50-gallon diesel tank I have to carry. I got the air compressor and the generator.
You got a lot of weight
the
in
tools
there too.
And stuff. The last time I went across scales. With just bare bones truck and stuff, I was running just over 9,000 pounds.
Oh, Lordy.
And stuff. I'm only tagged for 10,000 pounds and stuff. So when I hook the trailers and stuff to me and stuff, then you got to be, should I be really doing this or not?
Well, at least you got traction.
Oh, yeah, I got traction and stuff. And you know, this time of year and stuff, you really don't want to leave the gravel with that heavy of a truck.
No, you bury it.
And stuff. So I've been, you know, I got the little bitty Japanese mini truck. We've been using the far out of it because it goes just about anywhere and stuff. But it's really lightweight.
I saw one of those for sale the other day.
Did you?
It's in Irvine there. I can't remember where I saw it.
They're really fun trucks. Mine's a 4-speed, 4-wheel drive, lock and rear axles and stuff.
Well, I didn't stop and look at this one. I thought, you know, I'm thinking maybe next time I go through, if I see it sitting there, I'm going to stop.
It's 26 horsepower or something like that.
That's what he's saying. A pretty strong little
stuff. Really good little trucks, especially if you have a farm or something.
Well, the old Volkswagen Beetles were only 22 horsepower.
Yeah, yeah. That stuff. And you know, the old farm all Super A's and stuff like that, they's only 20-some horsepower, yeah. And you couldn't stop those things.
Well, I don't know what that Massey of mine is. It's got that 4-cylinder Continental motor in it, but it's a strong little tractor.
Yep. And so it's just a cool little truck to have. But yeah, my big truck, my big farm truck and stuff, Yeah, you don't want to take it off the gravel right now. You will get stuck and stuff. It's just that nasty.
Well, you know, I'm not burying in the mud, but I had locked my Ranger in four-wheel drive to turn around my yard the other day.
Really?
Because it was going to sit there and spin. On the grass.
You got all that sand and all that gravel over there.
Where the water goes down through, but things are still just wet.
It is. It's just
now, it dried some today. It got windy and the sun come out and it actually, when I get ready to re-rock my hill, whenever he can get to it, where he comes down by the house there, I'm going to get him to dump a big pile of rock right there in my little parking area. And then I want to push rock, turn the tractor and blade around backwards and push rock into my shop.
Far back in there,
because this tastes sloppy in there. Because I got a dirt floor in my shop, you know, and water comes down the sides. And right now I've got old pieces of plywood laying in there, so I can walk back. And I do a lot of mechanicing this time of year because I ain't got nothing else to do, and everything broke. But I want to push a bunch of rock in there. Now I've got the old backhoe. I could go down and get creek rock and bring it up, but that thing's such a hassle. And you know, I just
The other day, Dad goes out and gets the backhoe to do some clean up around the park up there, and lo and behold, it's got a flat tire on it. Imagine that. You need a piece of equipment and it's got a flat tire on it. And I hate this tire because I have aired this thing up so
one of the back ones?
No, front ones.
Front ones.
And this one's four-wheel drive.
Oh.
And so you got to take a ratchet strap and you'll put around that thing and then try to get
it. Oh, it comes off the rim?
Yeah, it comes off the rim and stuff. That's, you know, really fun ones.
Yeah.
And stuff. Got brand new tires on it, but they leak, or I guess around the sidewall or something like that. He says, won't you take that thing off there and go get it foam filled?
Fill full of slime or something?
Well, no, the foam, the you can put foam in them and stuff. I was like, all right, I'll call around, see who I can get foam filled tires and stuff.
Well, thing is, they bounce.
Well, this thing's so heavy, you don't have to worry about bouncing. And so I'll call around and stuff. I called a couple places over in Lexington. No, we don't do that no more stuff. You got to call this feller over here. And so I called that feller over there and stuff. He said, yeah, you got to bring that tire to me and stuff. And I'm like, dude, this come off of a front end of a four drive Case Super E, 580 Super E backhoe. This thing's heavy. He said, you still got to bring it to me. I'm like, okay. I was like, how much? He goes, well, it depends on the size of the tire. And I'm like, all right, can you give me a guesstimate? And he goes, nope. He said, I got to have your tire size.
Nice.
I'm like, all right. I says, so when I bring you this tire, I said, what happens then? He says, oh, you just drop it off and I'll give it back to you in about 7 to 10 days later. I'm like, 7 to 10 days later? I said, what if I need a backhoe before then? He said, sorry. He said, I got to take the tire from Lexington and send it to Louisville, and then it's got to get in line to be filled with foam.
Nah, that don't make no sense.
And then bring it back to Lexington, and then I was like, yeah, then I have to drive it back to Lexington to drive back to Mount Sterling.
Well, go to Town and Country and get you about 6 cans of crazy foam.
No, I don't know if that would work or not.
Well, yeah, it works in bicycle tires.
It would work in wheelbarrow tires, yes, and stuff. Heavy equipment tires.
Well, I don't know. I mean, foam, you know.
Oh, that's true. It might work. Have you seen the new Bobcat tires and stuff?
No, I haven't.
They don't have tires and stuff. They got webbing and stuff. No air in them whatsoever.
Oh, really?
And stuff. And they're actually starting to put them on army trucks and everything and stuff. And stuff. You can't run them flat and stuff. Because there's no air in them. So.
Oh yeah.
But that was just cool. And stuff. So I got this back on stuff, and then Dad's like, yeah, you got my tire fixed yet? And I'm like, I'm still trying to find the person to do it. He said, yeah, but all these other companies used to do it. I'm like, that's right. They used to do it.
Well, I guess there was no profit in it for them, you know.
Yeah, so there's only one.
A couple tires a year, maybe.
Yeah, heavy equipment tires and stuff. There's only one company that really does it now. And so they're a little backlogged, you know, trying to get it done and stuff. So I'll talk to him.
Yeah, I don't know anybody. I don't even think about it, really.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of companies used to do a lot of things.
Malcolm was telling, you know, that forklift we had up there in Harper Ridge, you know, all those tires are full of foam.
Uh-huh.
And now he lives up there in Owensboro, and apparently all their equipment are foam filled. So I don't know if they got somebody there that does it.
Yeah, see, you get foam filled, you don't ever have to worry about getting a flat tire again.
No. Well, like I said about that forklift before, though, with no foam in it, there's no fluid in there, and that thing if a dog wets on the ground there, you're going to spin in it.
So that's why you get that big long fork to push yourself out.
You push yourself right down the Slate Creek. Yeah. Well, I had something I wanted to talk about. Everybody knowed about Moonshine Mike dying.
Uh-huh.
Had leukemia.
Uh-huh.
Well, they've asked his wife, Sandra, if she'll head up a charity organization to help families and people that got somebody suffering from leukemia.
Uh-huh.
They're going to have their big charter meeting on the 9th. And I told her I'd try to plug a few things for her when she gets it, if it was all
okay.
right. But so many people helped her and Mike. When uh-huh. he wasn't able to do anything, and she spent 24/7 of her time taking care of Mike.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, friends and neighbors came in. They kept her grass mowed for her. They kept her house clean inside for her. They actually even put a new roof on her house,
uh-huh.
which is an extreme. But she wants to start this organization where they can do the same thing for people that are low-income people. They got somebody dying of leukemia.
Yeah,
they're not able to do anything, uh-huh. and to try to help them out the best they can.
Okay.
So it's going to be a charity organization, and not sure exactly how it's going to work yet, but they've asked her to head it up, and she just tickled to death about it, and I think she's going to do a wonderful job, because she's definitely got firsthand experience
yeah
on that. So
that'd be cool. Yeah, as soon as you get something together and stuff, let us know and stuff. I'll definitely be sharing it and stuff.
Well, maybe we could bring her on here and let her talk about
it. Yeah, we could do that stuff.
Yeah, you know, she's real nice lady and
stuff. That brings me to another point, stuff, Paul. I'm glad you brought that up, stuff. I've been meaning to talk about this for weeks now. And stuff. It's one of those things you need to write down, but we never write down.
Well, I try to remember things driving over the mountain. I forget it when I get here.
And stuff. So, we are always looking for people to interview and stuff on here. I would like to find a blacksmith. I would like to find furniture makers. I would like our old world furniture makers and stuff. If you have a trade that you really thoroughly enjoy doing, it's not just a job, but it's a hobby, it's a love and stuff, and you would like to be interviewed about doing it.
Well, you're creating something real, you know, in the world.
Yes, and you got soul in it and everything. So if you're one of those people and you would love to be interviewed on the radio and stuff, give me a shout. Everybody has my phone number, but here it is again. It's 1-859-585-5131. Leave a message. If you're not in my phone, I will not answer stuff for all the spams and scam calls and stuff. But if you are somebody that would like to be interviewed and you know, you're a blacksmith, a log cabin builder like Paul is or whatever and stuff, give us a call because we love sharing information.
Well, I haven't seen Matt and Corrine, a couple I was telling you, they're custom blacksmith people.
Uh-huh.
And they travel all around the country.
Yeah.
But they bought a log house place just down the road from me.
Uh-huh.
And I run into them every once in a while. But I was going to ask them if they'd be interested in coming on your show. They're really, really wonderful people.
Mm-hmm.
But they do really elaborate blacksmith. They work in all these breweries and places like that, and distilleries, and do all the elaborate uh-huh. ironwork and all in it, that kind of fancy stuff. And then not pounding out horseshoes. Yeah, and they're, I'd try to talk to them because they'd make interesting uh-huh. interview.
Yeah, I'm looking, you know, one part of Eastern Kentucky Homesteaders is spreading the information on to everybody else.
Right, it's a learning.
It's a learning. Eastern Kentucky Homesteaders on Facebook or on the radio or, you know, however you get in contact with us stuff. It's about giving the information out and spreading it in as much as we can. And so, if you would like to be interviewed, like I said, give me a call.
Well, I'll get a hold of Jack again and try to get a hold of him. You know, I talk with his wife all the time,
uh-huh.
and see what he'll do. You know, because uh-huh. you guys were talking about doing this once before, and then that COVID bug or whatever it was came in.
Yeah, so I haven't actually talked to him since then. But give us more information on Moonshine Mike and stuff when you talk to his wife and everything, and definitely keep us updated on that. And then, like I said, if you'd like to be interviewed and stuff, give me a call or call the radio station, and they'll put you in contact with us and everything, and we can go that route. What else we got, Paul? Stuff is about to wind out here.
Well, you know, I've been dealing with the daggone thyroid thing again. Yeah. You know, you guys have been hearing this for a year now. They won't leave it alone. They've completely converted me from hypothyroidism to hyperthyroidism, and it's got my sleeping throat way off. I've lost a tremendous amount of weight, you know, which is okay, but, you know, I didn't want to lose it that way.
Yeah.
And they basically said, you know, be careful, Paul, or you will have a heart attack.
You're the one messing with it.
You know, leave it alone. So they put me on this big, giant dose, you know, and I said, you know, that's kind of a big jump, you know, from medicine. And then now they put me back on the same dose I was already on when they told me it wasn't high enough. I go, wait. So what I'm going to try to do is when I go back in 6 weeks, you know, because they want you in there every 6 weeks, cha-ching, cha-ching, you know. I got me one of those little pill cutters, and so I'm going to say, listen, this is what we'll do. Put me on the real high dose,
yeah,
and I'll make my own.
Yeah, yeah, you can do that.
You know.
Be careful of that, though. You mess that up.
Well, you know, I need something more than 120, and I don't need 180.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can take a 180, and I can cut it into four little pieces, you know, and, you know, of course, the pharmaceutical company's going to miss out on a dollar or two a month because end up with more medicine than
that. Daggone it.
Yeah, I hate when they, you know, go bankrupt like that.
Yeah. All righty, folks, we are out of time for this show. I hope everybody learned something or something other.
Yeah.
That stuff.
Or I hope somebody can call in and teach us something.
Yeah, I like to do that.
I'm about ready to learn something new.
Yeah, and I'm always willing to learn something. And stuff. I hope everybody has a blessed weekend, a blessed work week ahead.
Well, I ain't planning on doing much of anything. I'm going to try to make it through another week, and then I'm ready to go back to work.
Yeah, I got to get that truck back together and get that fencing done.
I ain't picked up any rocks for a while. My calluses are all falling off. I need to get back on that rock pile.
Well, I asked you about that the other day. I ain't going to do it. It's too wet. Yeah.
Well, it is too wet, but I'm waiting for you to, it dries out and warms up a little. Got to get back on it.
Well, right now, I think we only got like 7 weeks of winter left or something like that.
Well, the way the weather has been the last year, this winter's liable to last until April, you know.
I only got enough hay to get it through the end of February.
Well, I'm looking at the wood in my shed.
Yeah.
If I hadn't bought this new stove I've got, I'd be out of wood by now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm burning probably less than half the wood and getting not much more heat.
Well, that's cool.
You know, I like the little stove. I'm starting to get it figured out now how to handle it. You just can't. You put two pieces of wood in there, it lasts just about all night.
Yeah.
The other stove, you had to fill it plumb full. Uh-huh. And then you had to get up every 2 or 3 hours and fill it plumb full again.
Yeah, that sucks, don't it?
Yeah.
All right, folks. Paul, you got anything else?
Bye. It was fun. It was real.
All right, man. Everybody, have a good one. So long.
Love what I do till the day I'm dead. I'll be working on my old homestead.